2015-30 instead of 2020. Is that possible, Mr. Titchener?
Pardon?
To give Eden at 2015.
You want Eden 2015-30 instead of 2020.
We can have a shot and we'll cable them back. We have a shot.
It's doubtful, Jack. We'll try and cable you. Oh, that's impossible.
Come back, will you, Jack? Oh, I've got one or two points to take up.
It isn't possible, Mr. Bennett.
I've got one or two points to take up with him.
It isn't possible to let him know immediately after the
conference. All right. This is Bill Hillman speaking from London. It is 5 o'clock in the morning here. The Germans have crossed the Marne. They have crossed the Seine. They are closing in on Paris. German thrusts on the great battlefront from the Channel to the Argonne have taken on the character of an attempt to smash the French line in both the western and eastern sectors and to encircle the French capital. The Germans claimed to be only 12 and a half miles from Paris. The French admit the Nazis are within 17 miles. There is no indication this morning at this hour of any change in the position, although fierce fighting continues. The French are outnumbered. The Germans have a superiority in airplanes, tanks, and mechanized equipment. Mr. Churchill has promised the French maximum British support in men and materials. This help is urgently needed. It is needed immediately. Decisions of vital importance are understood to have been taken in a conference between Mr. Churchill, Mr. Eden, Mr. Reynaud, Marshal Pétain, and General Wagon. A council of ministers is expected to be held in France shortly. The government will be asked to approve the decisions made at the Churchill-Reynaud conference. Mr. Churchill has reported to his cabinet and King George. The complete and scientific speedy polling of the Allied resources and equipment and men at the present juncture is vital if the German armed thrust is to be held. The Seine and the Marne must be held. The more French factories and fields fall into Hitler's hands, the more dependent will France become on outside material. More important, too, become the ports and harbors through which materials and reinforcements must come. Line has to move further south below the Seine and the Marne. Extra mile frontage must be filled to reach the sea. Look at the map. You will note how such a line stretches as it moves backward. Already suffering from numerical inferiority, this wider frontage would further thin the defense. If the French fell back to the Loire River, an even greater number of reinforcements from the British would be essential. There is not the slightest sign yet of any slackening in the offensive. False hopes will be aroused to expect it yet. The French continue to fight doggedly. They will take heavy toll of the enemy. They are holding their main lines intact, but they are like a football team which continues to hold the ball on a new yard line. They are being pushed back to their own goalpost. The Germans have hurled masses of infantry across the Marne at Chateau Thierry, where American troops had their baptism of fire in the last war. Chateau Thierry is 50 miles east of Paris, 40 miles west of the French capital between Rouen and Vernon. The Germans are trying to pour troops through. In the center of the battlefront, which runs from Oise to the sea, German advance guards were last officially reported by the French to be 17 miles away from Paris. It is into the battle for Paris that the German High Command is flinging most of the German reserves of men and material, regardless of all cost. The loss of Paris is considered possible if it is necessary to keep the main line intact. If the Germans widen the thrust in the west and the east, Paris may become the end of a new bulge as Germans seek to encircle the capital. To straighten out the line, Paris might have to be abandoned. There is a tendency to regard the possible loss of Paris as not vital, provided the main line is unbroken. But make no mistakes about this. The sentimental value of the loss of Paris to the French would be great. The spurt to the morale of the Germans would be inestimable. After all, Paris has never been directly taken by the Germans in the many decades of hostility between Germany and France. The fall of Paris would mark the end of an important chapter in European history. From the banks of the Seine and the Marne, stretching eastward, a new Europe would unfold itself. A Europe in which the revolutionary philosophy of fascism, national socialism, or chauvinistic and imperialistic proletarianism gripped the overwhelming majority of the people. In their haste to find adjectives descriptively offensive enough about Mussolini's declaration of war, many have overlooked a reference in his speech more important than his method of going to war. Mussolini called on Italy, proletarian and fascist, to fight. He, like Hitler, scored what he termed the plutocracies of the West. What Mussolini and Hitler are doing is carrying revolution to Europe, and every mile of European soil they conquer, they are sowing the seeds of mass revolt against the Western economic and social order. The tanks and masses of infantry of Hitler moving across the face of Europe with startling rapidity are not merely carrying one nationalistic flag to replace permanently or temporarily the flag of the people defeated. They are carrying the seeds of a social and not out merely for spoils in the good old-fashioned way, that is, grab what they want and leave some untouched loot for the victims to hold on to. They intend to establish their own order of things everywhere they go, not only to safeguard their own gains, but because essentially they believe they have a mission to fulfill. That mission is to alter the social structure as well as the map of Europe. Hitler wants to smash France as quickly as possible to get to England. He thinks he can do it simultaneously with the capture of Paris. The French, however, are determined to fight on even if Paris falls, if France can get reinforcements. But the fall of Paris would be a symbol Hitler would exploit to the fullest. You may be certain Versailles, just a short ride from Paris, will be the first place he will visit. Perhaps in the Hall of Mirrors, where the Versailles Treaty was signed, Hitler may proclaim vengeance and the beginning of a new order of things in Europe. That is what he and Mussolini are after. The bad manners they show in achieving it, to put it mildly as that, are of little matter compared to what they are aiming to achieve. No longer is Paris the city of light. Over it drifts a great ominous pall of smoke from burning towns and forests, set on fire by tornadoes of bombs and shells, according to dispatches here. The city is deserted as the rumble of guns grows in intensity. Paris, in the hands of Hitler, will certainly be no city of light to Europe or the world, except to those who think the revolution he and Mussolini are initiating in Europe means anything but darkness. Perhaps Hitler and Mussolini are only preparing for the proletarian revolution nearer to Stalin's idea of things. One thing is certain. The Europe Hitler is rolling up with his steam shovel is going to be vastly different from what it was and is. The Italian phase of the war for the moment is just a sideshow. The Italian industrial north has been bombed. Italian warships and bases have been bombed. But these actions are relatively unimportant as the fate of Paris is being decided. In Madrid this morning, it is officially announced that the Spanish government is adopting an attitude of non-belligerence in the European war. This is an important development. Hitherto, the Spanish attitude was one of neutrality. Italy was the first nation to adopt the policy of non-belligerency, a new way in international affairs of saying you don't intend to fight on one side or the other, but you certainly are sympathetic to one side and will give whatever help you may short of war. Italy was non-belligerent ally of Germany for 9 months. The United States is a non-belligerent sympathizer of the Allies. Spain now is non-belligerent and a sympathizer with the fascist cause. Italy and Germany helped the present government to power. Italy and Germany promised Spain that in the new carve-up of Europe, if they can achieve this carve-up, Spain will have Gibraltar back. The British will be asked to give that long-held rock back to the Spaniards. Italy wants the other end of the Mediterranean, the Suez. Diplomatic circles indicate Italy seeks also the protectorate of Egypt, as well as the land claims of Nice, Savoy, Corsica, and Tunis. Proletariat Italy wants to taste a little of the plutocratic riches. We return you now. That's the end of it, Jack.